This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Speaking, you can lock the control key with Alt L, and that means you don't have to hold the control key for the length of your speech, but you have to remember to unlock it when you finish speaking with Alt L as a toggle to unlock it as well. So you have the option of either holding the control key whilst you speak or Alt L to lock and unlock it. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, everybody, thanks very much for coming along tonight to listen to our little presentation here. I've known Chang Hock for probably 20 years. Years ago, we used to race together, tandem cycling, race together at the Paralympics in 96 in Atlanta. Since then, Chang has, with his involvement there, has not stopped his involvement within the blindness community. Chang Hock has been president of the World Blind Union Asia Pacific region. He is one of the foremost great minds when it comes to adaptive technology for people who are blind and vision impaired. And in his spare time, he has decided to create or found a guide dog school in Singapore. Can I introduce to you, please, ladies and gentlemen, Chang Hock Kuo.
Thank you very much, Greg, and a very good evening to all of you out there, down under. As Greg might have pointed out to you, I am out in Singapore. I hope I don't speak too fast. I will try to speak as slowly as I can remember. And for those out in the eastern states, I hope your pillow is ready. You might be put to sleep because I might be telling you quite a bit of history about what I've been about doing and the work of the Guide Dogs Services in Singapore. We are not a school yet, though Greg said it's school, but typically we are just an association that has just started up to look into providing guide dog services to those blind people interested in an alternative method of getting around. So before I go further, as I said, this is a relatively new organization. It's called the Guide Dogs Association Limited. And presently, we've just raised enough money this year to employ 3 people. We've got an office manager, a clerical support staff, and 1 guide dog instructor. So if you do contact us in Singapore, then the manager is Ying, the secretarial support is Gina, and our guide dog instructor is Mr. Dennis Walker. My board is made up of a group of volunteers. 7 of them, 6 are not blind, and only 1 blind guy. I was on the board for a while. I started this organization, and I stepped out of the board early this year so that I could spend more time as a action guy involved in trying to get things moving, because for the past few years, though we have been there, we have not actually been very far. So again, as I said, if I have to spend more time, then I need to step out of the board so that I can dedicate more time to the grassroots and making sure things happen. Now, let me tell you a bit about Singapore. For those of you who have visited, you would realize that Singapore is typically a very crowded country. 600 square kilometers thereabouts, 5 million people. So it is a very densely populated area. If you've been to downtown Sydney, I think it's as busy or a little busier than Singapore, but it's almost like that feel. So if you go into the housing estates, like in my residential area, it's all high-rise buildings. I live on in a 25-story building on the 16th floor. So you can imagine my guide dog is always up in the air with me if I'm back home, other than walking the streets when we're out. My board members are made up of, as I said, my chairman is a colorectal specialist. The others include an ophthalmologist, a veterinarian surgeon, a lawyer and an accountant, and a lecturer in occupation therapy with a polytechnic, and somebody who's in the lottery commissions. I was very interested in dogs, and I grew up with dogs when I was very much younger, living in a village with no running water, no electricity. Houses were made of planks and rough wood and thatched leaf roof, no proper sanitation, but I grew up that way, and I always loved dogs and I live with dogs. When I went to primary school, it was the school for the blind, and my first book that I read about a guide dog was a book called Emma and I. Now this must be a very, very old book, and I read that book way, way, way back in the 60s. And that was how I became very intrigued by how guide dogs could help blind people. I imagine I was in primary school, there was no O&M taught to primary kids. I didn't know how to use a white cane. I was very much left to chance. I was I'm a person with RP, so I could see a bit when I was much younger, so I could walk about without the cane. But as age caught on, it became sort of more challenging, and I learned my cane skills when I was in year or grade 6 and reaching year 7. I was very fortunate to be taught by a good O&M instructor at that time. And I started traveling about on my own with a white cane on public buses, going to school. I was integrated by the time I was in grade 7, and I then went to school on the bus. So always found it challenging, frustrating using the white cane and pushing around. And in a couple of years, we actually lost this particular instructor to Australia. So for those of you who might know him, his name is Chong, and he left Singapore, I think, around about 1975 to work for Royal Guide Dog Services in Victoria as one of his O&M instructors. Now, I'm telling you all this because all this later on add up to my encounter with more guide dogs. And in 1977, I made my first trip to Australia. Now, remember, I read about this book on a guide dog called Emma. And in my mind, I always wanted to go and experience and find out and learn what this guide dog is all about and how it works. I went to the FastPig Games in 1977, met a few working guide dogs, very fascinated, very excited. And then, of course, down in Sydney, coming all the way from Singapore, I visited Melbourne and I visited Chong. And they brought me down to Victoria Guide Dogs today in Kew. And, of course, I was really feasting on that visit with all the kennels and the dogs and what the people were doing. So that left a very, very strong impression in my mind about, you know, the day will come when I want to really get a guide dog. But it was not going to be possible in those times in terms of the condition for guide dogs to work in Singapore, my own economic condition, and a place that would give me a guide dog was something not real and was not going to happen. In 82, I went to study in Melbourne doing my special education. The college then was Victoria College in Burwood and is now part of the Deakin University. And one of my modules was O&M and guide dogs, and I was posted to Kew. And my lecturers then were Mr. John Gosling and Mr. Ian Cox. So again, I was brought into close contact with guide dogs and O&M. And my mind was really now, I must get a guide dog. And towards the end of my study in 1982, I did ask John. I said, hey, John, if I were to want a guide dog, would it be possible? And of course, he said, you know, nothing is impossible, but the price tag was going to be $5,000. And my pay in those days was only like $250. So to think of shelling out $5,000 for a guide dog, well, I have to think about it and think real hard. Of course, I knew that there was the Lady Nelsing Eye Dog then. So I thought, well, since I'm really in Melbourne, why not try the other school and see whether I would get somewhere? And of course, Lady Nell was willing to look at that a possibility. And they put me in training in November on a 6 weeks program. And eventually I had a dog in Singapore in 1983. But Singapore, being a very multiracial place, didn't quite accept the idea of a guide dog working on public transport and in public places. And to make things worse, the Association for the Blind at the time, which was my employer, I was a school teacher there then, wrote to the media to say that it would not be feasible and good for blind people to use a guide dog. And of course, all the reasons they gave were ridiculous and reasons that would infuriate you, so I shall not attempt to say what those reasons are or were. So as a result, I didn't get much headway, and after a year and a half, I've just got to give up because I could only walk around the place where I stayed. And I couldn't go on the bus. Initially, I tried to bargain, negotiate, coerce, cajole, whatever I did with the bus drivers. And he would always chase me off the bus. So it came to a point in time where I just went up the bus and sat and not move. But eventually, he learned a better tactic to get rid of this blind guy and his dog. Because when he chased me off the bus, the commuters were angry with him. He resorted to turning off the bus engine. Now he got the passengers against the blind guy. So I realized that I was fighting a losing battle. The only department that was willing to help me was the ministry in charge of restaurants and public food places. They said they were willing to look at how they could help. But all the other departments were sort of closing their doors. So in 1984, I gave it up. So too bad. It came to a very short start and a quick end. Like I mentioned, Singapore is very crowded, very easy to get around. With a cane, you can quite get people to help you move around quite easily. As a result, the O&M training was less than satisfactory. As a result, more and more blind people resorted to always having to depend on a sighted friend, somebody to take them from place to place. They could go out, they could take a bus, get off a bus, at a bus stop, they can easily find somebody to take them to the building. So that was how life went on. Not for me, I used my cane and I went about. In 1999, this is all history. Remember 84, I gave up my dog. So for those of you with short patience, you probably have given up and wouldn't try again. In 84 to 99, I had no dog, I had my cane. And the outgoing second Prime Minister said in one of his speeches at that time that the time has come for Singapore to change its approach to having new ideas taken up. Now, up to that time, there was no bar top dancing. There was no bungee jumping, even though it was already very, very well accepted in Australia, New Zealand, and in Europe and the United States. Pardon me, ladies, it's the majority of you on the audience tonight, ladies, but Singapore only had one topless bar. So if the government was saying that it is now time for Singapore to stop saying no to this and that, of course no to chewing gum, but you could chew gum, but no selling of gums. The time had come for things to be done in the best way that can be accepted by most people and safely for everybody. And after that speech, bungee jumping was allowed, bar top dancing was allowed, and to me, my guide dog issue would be equally important and should be allowed. And 2 years later, in 2001, we had a third Prime Minister by that time. And he said Singapore should now become a more socially tolerant country and be more accepting of each other's social needs. Now, with those very two important Prime Minister speeches, I knew that the time was fast coming close for me to bring up the possibility of setting up a guide dog service in Singapore. In 2002, I was visiting Taiwan with my World Blind Union Asia Pacific work, and I was visiting the Institute for the Blind in Taipei. And they had a guide dogs program up there, and the former president of Taiwan was actually the guest of honor in one of their events. And he was talking about how wonderful it was to have guide dogs for the blind in the country and this and that. And of course, I met up with two persons who were actively involved in the guide dog services, one from Japan in Osaka, but the other, a gentleman known to you, Mr. Ian Cox, who was at that time in 1982, one of my lecturers as well in Kew. And he was working in New Zealand guide dogs and assisting the Taiwanese program. And he knew of my experience and said encounter in 1983-84, and he knew I always wanted a guide dog. So we had a chat in 2002. He said, "Oh, Singapore should be ready and should be very good for guide dogs." And of course, I invited him over. He came and he checked out the place with me, and we went to the restaurants, to the hawker centers, food halls, and public places, buses, and everywhere. And he said, "Singapore is now perfect, ideal working condition for guide dogs." So we actually went to knock on doors of various government departments to sound them up on our plans and intention to get guide dogs into Singapore. In 2003, we had a World Blind Union Asia Pacific Conference in Singapore, and I had a group of blind people who were interested in guide dogs as well, and we all got together as part of the topic of the discussion at that time on the provision of guide dogs as an O&M service. And Ian spoke, and several blind people were very excited about it. And I was then introduced to a United States Foreign Embassy staff working in Singapore, Mr. Alex Barrasso, who had his guide dog from Guiding Eyes in the East Coast of the United States. He came in year 2002, and in November he was leaving Singapore. And I then caught up with him because I heard that he actually had a guide dog with him in Singapore. This was his last week of service in Singapore, and he was very frustrated. He shared with me that for 2 years, he was not allowed to go anywhere with his guide dog. He could only walk around his premises, go to the nearby park, only take taxis to wherever he wanted to go, and was told that he was not even allowed on the mass rapid transit train. Now, this really infuriated me, because when the trains started operating in Singapore in 1987, it already provided for guide dogs, but nobody knew. And he was told that he was not allowed. And his parting remark was, Singapore is such a developed country, among the first world of nations in terms of economy, in terms of infrastructure, but it's worse than the third world when it comes to social services for the blind. Now that really spoke to me. I knew that I really have to work very hard to resolve this, because it is both in my interest, in the interest of others who want to choose guide dog as an option, and for others who may want to visit Singapore with their guide dogs. So in 03, I actually spoke to some members of parliament on my plans and my intention, and they told me that they are ready to make sure that this comes about, and they will be very, very supportive of my initiative and plans. So in 03, I registered an organization. I didn't want to call it the Guide Dogs Organization at that time, just not to sort of create too much anxiety. And I called it the Blind Foundation. And through that, I started working with all the government departments officially to put into place provision to accept guide dogs. And the Environment Agency was at that time looking at providing amendments to allow food shops to serve animal foods to their pets at the same time as serving food to the human beings. And they said that if they were to say no to guide dog, it would be an indictment on their practices. To say yes to pet dogs going for meals with their owner at pet restaurants and said no to guide dogs. So I knew the conditions were right. High-rise apartments didn't allow big dogs to be kept in those apartments. I went to visit with them, and we discussed on the provision for guide dogs, and they were willing to allow guide dogs to live in high-rise apartments on a case-by-case basis if they are guide dogs. One of the issues of concern, which you now have in Australia as well, is the anxiety that the Islamic people have when they are close to dogs. And one of the concerns was, will there be a problem with the Islamic community when it comes to guide dogs? So I actually spoke extensively to the Islamic Council, and they were very supportive. They said that they will give their full support when the day comes for guide dogs to be used in Singapore. So with all this in mind, I knew that the day must come sooner than later. Now going back to 911, when I was traveling to Santo Domingo in September 2001 for the IPSA World Assembly, I was flying through Taipei to get to Los Angeles to New York, and then board a flight to Santo Domingo. And I actually boarded the flight in the evening of 911 at 5:30 p.m. in Singapore, and that was 5:30 a.m. in New York. The plane landed in Taipei at about 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. And we were told that the plane would stop in Taipei. We were not allowed to go into the United States because there was an emergency. I ended up spending 3 days in a hotel in Taipei, nothing much to do but watch CNN. And just before I left Taipei to fly back via Singapore to Amsterdam to Santo Domingo, Michael Hingson came on the TV on CNN, interviewed by Larry King, on how he managed to escape the Twin Tower with the help of his guide dog. Now, that was a moving story, and that remained in my mind. And I said I had to go and seek him out and meet him in person and see whether he could help me with my guide dog's program. And at the same time, many things happened in 03. I went to meet up with John Gosling again because I thought maybe I should ask him before I go to the United States. By this time, he told me, yes, it's still possible for me to get a guide dog, but the price tag has gone to $30,000. So that was a no-no. No. $30,000 was not possible. I met up with Michael Hinson in 04. He heard my plans to start a guide dogs program in Singapore. He was very supportive, and he arranged for me to meet guide dogs in St. Raphael in September 04. I met up with the training director. I met up with the CEO, and I went for a walk with one of their guide dogs, and they were happy that my rapport with guide dogs was still there. I could still handle a guide dog, and they agreed that I could be considered for a guide dog once conditions were more favorable. And this was September 04. And by January 05, we were all ready to go. All the government departments were ready to provide all the legal support. I actually finished all my medical, and in July 05, I went in for my training. It was a 3 weeks program. August, I came back, I had my guide dog, and I contacted all the government departments, and they said, well, they will put things into action to provide for guide dog access. And within 6 weeks, by September 19, Parliament actually addressed the issue, and a statement was made to the Parliament by the Minister for Community, Youth and Sports that guide dogs will be allowed in Singapore, into all public places. And with that statement, everything fell into place. The bus company changed its operations, rules of operation in November 05. Guide dog was allowed onto buses. And in 06 January, all food handling places, including restaurants, supermarkets, and places that ordinarily prohibit guide dogs, are allowed to accommodate blind people with guide dogs. So I then got a group of people together in 06 to form officially the Guide Dogs Association of the Blind. And by the time the guide dogs instructor paid me a field support visit in March 03 on their way to Victoria Guide Dogs, they met up with a group of about 10 blind people who said, well, they really want a guide dog. And out of the 10 of them, only one had good O&M skills. The rest couldn't even get around on their own without public assistance to take them from bus stop to building. So we realized that a lot has to be done. So what I'm going to tell you will be too long and very dreary, but in 06, we did a fundraising work. In 08, we were about ready to start. There was a donor that was willing to come up with our seeding fund, but due to the economic crash at the end of 08, everything came to a stop. And only last year that I managed to get more money, and I brought in an O&M instructor at the end of last year to help us prepare all these applicants who want guide dogs to have good O&M skills before they can go for the guide dogs. And then we found another donor that gave us enough funds to employ a guide dog instructor for 3 years, which was the requirement by GDB that we have a guide dog instructor working in Singapore before they can send more dogs to Singapore. So our guide dog instructor Dennis came to Singapore in August this year. So he's now preparing every area of work so that more guide dogs will start to come to Singapore by sometime early next year. Okay, now let me tell you a bit about my own guide dog. Kendra has been with me in Singapore for 5 years. She's traveled around the world with me to many countries, to Canada and back to the United States, to London and to Geneva. She's been to Australia a couple of times. She's been to Beijing and to Korea as well before. I want you to go away after today's chat with at least some knowledge that you might want to use should the day come when you need to. And that is, if you decide to travel with your guide dog, it's actually quite easy. I know it may sound costly, but if you know how to get around it, it might be quite doable. And most of you would know that Qantas generally would provide an empty seat next to you so that you have more space to spread out. I go in and out of Australia regularly, so I believe I know the regulation quite well in terms of preparation of the dog to come to Australia and leave Australia. And I must tell you that the Australian quarantine guys, at least in Canberra, are very helpful as far as when I need to have my paperwork done. The folks in WA are also very, very helpful. More helpful than the quarantine department in Singapore to a guy from Singapore coming in and out of Australia. Singapore will allow you in directly from Australia without any quarantine restriction. Your dog can go straight into work in Singapore, though there is now legal provision for guide dogs to enter all public places. There still has to be need to discuss with the building owners and property owners beforehand to avoid frustration when you show up. And Guide Dogs Singapore and myself will be more than willing to provide that support and help to you if you so decide to visit Singapore with your guide dog. Application for the permit to enter Singapore is all online, and you can pay for that with a Visa card, and it's $50 to come into Singapore. When you leave Singapore to go back to Australia, you have to advise your quarantine department on your plans, and you should negotiate with them for certain waivers of blood tests if you're returning from Singapore. And you may actually be granted those kind of dispensation. What else would I want you to know about guide dogs? Now, going back to Kendra, so she's been in and out of many countries. We've got her on TV programs to show the provision of guide dogs and the use of guide dogs in the newspapers. My volunteers have also started a Facebook for Kendra under the name of Kendra Kua, K-E-N-D-R-A-K-U-A. So I believe, I was told, she has over 1,000 fans on Facebook. I can go on telling you many more things, but what we're doing is to look forward to more guide dogs coming into Singapore in the coming months, and into setting up our programs and services to increase O&M support and training to more blind people so that they will then get out and about. And then when they get active, they will realize the benefit of having a guide dog. And we also look forward to expanding our programs and eventually to set up facilities to train guide dogs in Singapore. But that is going to be a few more years down the road. Okay, I can answer some questions if you have questions to ask me, because I might not have told you what you want to know, and you're welcome to ask those questions. And then I can tell you more as the questions come forward. So Rowena, would you like to take over and lead the question?
Thank you very much, Cheng, for sharing your story. I was sitting here with my mouth open listening to the problems that you experienced in the early days of trying to have guide dogs accepted in Singapore. I think it makes Australia look like a very fortunate place to struggle with so few advocacy issues, although I guess advocacy and access is a problem in all countries. I'm just overwhelmed at what you've achieved with your advocacy and your determinism, and good on you for doing that. The question I was going to ask you basically answered. I just wanted to clarify that you actually do not have facilities for training dogs in Singapore at the moment. Am I right to say that at the moment dogs are being trained and brought in from Australia? Is that right?
Yes, you are right in your first part. There is no training facility yet because we don't want to get bogged down before we even get started. We, in principle, have an agreement from Guide Dogs Inc. in San Rafael, United States, in California, to give us the dogs. So those who are ready to go for their dogs will spend 2 weeks in Oregon to train with their dog and then come back to Singapore and do more home training and be qualified as guide dog handlers from then. So our dogs will be overseas trained. We may look at Australia as an option in the future, and neighboring countries, because to depend on one donor might not be too feasible. And we believe that by the time we reach maybe 2025 teams in Singapore, the time will be right to at least start our own puppy raising and training in Singapore. But even before we go into puppy training, we might actually have to bring in grown-up puppies and then train in Singapore. Then the third stage is to actually raise the puppies in Singapore. So all this would progress in stages. And we want to spend our limited resources enhancing the acceptance and awareness on the access for guide dogs and get the guide dogs come in from overseas so that they are ready to work. And then in 3 to 5 years time, start training them.
So how many working guide dog teams do you have in Singapore at the moment? And that's my last question, so please anybody else jump in with questions.
Well, it's embarrassing to tell you at the moment it's only one, and we cannot stay that way for long because the media is very excited, the volunteers, the donors are very excited in getting more dogs into Singapore, because with one guide dog, the accessibility is very slow in terms of trying to get more people exposed to how well a guide dog can function in public places. And I cannot go to the same place over and over again, and you know, by the time I come back to the same place 7 months later, the workers have changed and I've got to start re-advocating. So a lot of work has to be done in the advocacy area and the access area. So we are working very hard on that. So from next year, we believe we will have about another 4 to 6 teams coming. That is on schedule.
Chang, it's Nicole. I'm just wondering, you made reference to the fact that on occasion when you asked for a dog, you were told how much it would cost. Does that mean that handlers or people in Singapore wishing to get a dog must bear the cost of getting the dog themselves?
No, we will not be asking the blind people to pay for the dog because we will do the fundraising to employ the instructors to help with the follow-up service and the training. For now, Guide Dogs Inc. in the United States agree that they will not charge for the dogs if we get the dogs from them. If we get dogs from other places, then we have to work out a schedule and a program so that we can absorb those costs into actually staff salary and training. So blind people will be given the dog free of charge, and we will also cover their airfare to go to the country of training. So they will not have to pay anything.
Hello, Cheng Hock. It's Giselle from Sydney. I was also amazed by what you have achieved. I think it's inspiring. And yes, like Rowena said, I think we're very lucky in Australia, even though sometimes we have a few gripes. It's nothing like you've experienced. One question I wanted to ask you. In Australia, one of the problems we have often is the public being far too interested in our guide dog while it's working, coming to pat the dog and talk to the dog and distract the dog. In your experience with Kendra in Singapore, do you have this issue? Thank you.
I must confess that there is even greater distraction because there's only one dog. At least there are many of you out there, so you know you can attract different groups of people to distract your dog. So yes, it is a problem. And not many people understand that they must not distract the dog. Now, one more greater problem for me, because Kendra is almost like a PR dog. I mean, she's the first guide dog. People just can't resist. So there's a lot of teaching and a lot of awareness work that I have to do while I'm walking even. So can you imagine how much distraction, both to the dog and to me in getting to my destination. But it is very important to show to the onlookers that people are accepting guide dogs, people are excited, people are supportive, than to show that people are frightened and being shooed off or running away from guide dogs. So it is a problem, yes, it is a good problem in some ways, and we have to deal with it as we progress so that people will learn that they must not distract the dog too much. So usually I would sit the dog down before I talk to the people and allow them to at least say hello to Kendra. So I know it's difficult, it's frustrating, but being the first guide dog, she's coping with it very well.
Hi, it's Nicole again. I'm just wondering, do you have areas where you're able to exercise Kendra and let her have a run around, since you live in an apartment and you said how very crowded it is in Singapore?
Yes, she does have a lot of walks with me. I will actually take her down on leash just to give her long walks without having to feel like she's working. Now, while I've told you Singapore is crowded, Singapore has a lot of greenery as well. You'd be surprised. Down below my apartment block, there's lots of grass. And there are lots of long pathways with grass on either side as well for her to walk and sniff around. So I always give her moments. If she's going to work and going out with me, she gets her time off to relieve. But if I'm back home, I will still take her down to walk around the place just on leash, and I use my cane. So she does get all her walks and exercise. To let her run free and off leash is not quite easy. I got to find schools that are willing to let me in, and when their gates are locked, then I can do that, but not so often and not so frequently. There are public places where they call it the free dog run area, but again, I don't know how much trash or dirt is left in there by other dogs, and there might be other unfriendly dogs in those places, so I don't feel comfortable going to those places.
Are there any other questions from anybody?
Ching, it's Greg here. From memory, I think you've said you've had Kendra for 5 years now, so in the next couple of years you're going to have to think about going down the track of getting a replacement dog so Kendra can enjoy her retirement in Singapore. Firstly, would that be an issue for you, having two dogs, if you go down that track? And secondly, would you be getting your, well, you wouldn't know where you'll be getting your dogs from, but certainly you'd be looking forward to that process, training with a newer dog.
Yes, I hope that the dog stays healthy for another 3 to 4 years, and then face the question when it comes, or cross the bridge when I come to it. But remember I told you about the high-rise apartments, we call them the HDB apartments, which is built by the government, or slightly lower-cost housing. They do prohibit big dogs in these apartments, and when they actually gave the permission for Kendra to be housed here, it was on a case-by-case basis. At that time, we did talk about retiring guide dogs and whether we'll be allowed to keep the retired guide dogs. They didn't say no, but they didn't want to say yes at that time, but they said, we'll look at it when the time comes. So it is a indirect way of saying that it would be considered. So as long as you don't get a no, it's potentially a yes. That's how I look at it. And when the time comes, where to get the next dog from would be a very important question. It would be also an economic exercise. It would be a political exercise. All sorts of questions thrown in. Guide dogs in principle will give me a replacement dog, but if we do not have adequate field support instructors, then of course that will become a problem. But I don't see that as a problem, because we'll be sending Singaporeans to be trained as guide dog instructors from next year. So in 3 to 4 years' time, we believe we'll have our own Singaporean guide dog instructors in-house to provide field support. So I see getting a dog from any place will be almost quite...
And that's interesting that you say you're going to be training your own guide dog instructors in-house. Will they be going to the US for that training?
Well, in today's economy, cost is also very important. We have been looking at whether it should be in Queensland, whether it should be in Randwick in Sydney, whether it should be in Victoria, or whether it should be in the United States. Again, United States, should it be with Guide Dogs Inc.? On the O&M part, I want them to do O&M and guide dogs. So in O&M, would they go to San Francisco State Uni or Louisiana Tech? All these are questions that we've been answering. We've been collecting dollars and cents figures so that when the time comes next year to send the person, we would have made the right choice, having the right numbers in hand. So definitely we'll be actively looking at Australia or the US, but more likely Australia by the sound.
This is Rowena. Cheng Hock, on behalf of Dog Guide Handlers Australia, I would like to thank you very much for being our guest speaker tonight. It's been wonderful to share your story, and it is an inspiration to us, and I guess a part of the objectives of Dog Guide Handlers Australia is to network with other dog guide handlers in other countries, and to network with other international guide dog schools. So we wish you every success with your future guide dog movement in Singapore. And once again, thank you for being here tonight.
Thanks, Zarina and Greg, and of course to all of you out there. The website for our Singapore operations is, of course, www.guidedogs.org.sg. And Kendra is on the Facebook under the name of Kendra Kwa. And I'm sure you will circulate my email address to your lists. And they are welcome to send me an email if they want to check on anything or ask any questions. You can also circulate my Australian phone numbers. My Sydney number is 02-800-43210. Or my Melbourne number is 03-9017-9524. And my Perth number is 08-9467-2128. Now, all these numbers will find me in Singapore or to whichever country I travel to that has internet connectivity. I will send those details to you by email so you can share with those who would like to stay in touch. And if they are traveling to Singapore, I'll be more than glad to provide whatever assistance that they may need in terms of coming with your guide dogs. So I look forward to seeing you, and I'll probably join up with your email list. If you do have one, you send me the details or you can sign me up. Now, another list that I am on actively because of my association or affiliation to the NFP in the United States is the NAGDU list, with many guide dog users on that list. And these guide dog users come from different schools in the United States. So you might want to check that out. I know some of you are also with the ACB list called GDUI. I think they are also a very active guide dog list in the United States. Thank you very much, Rowena, and friends out there.
Thank you very much for making your time available.
Hey, Greg, when's your next internet meeting?
I didn't quite catch that, but I think what you said when our next meeting is, it will probably, I'm not quite sure whether they're going to have one in December, but I will certainly let you know so you can be involved.
Okay, thanks. And good night to all of you out there in the eastern states, and a good evening to you guys.
Yeah, I've got to go home now as well, so I'll say goodbye to everybody. We did mention that we are recording this, both Rowena and myself. So we'll, once we figure out how we're going to make that available, we will let you know how you can get a hold of the recording. I think that's going to be a fantastic recording. You must admit that was a great presentation by Cheng Hock.
Thank you, Cheng, and thank you all. Good night.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?